everybody. Cal Banyan, Cal Banyan's Hypnosis, etc. I'm, guess who? Cal Banyan. And I'm so excited to tell you something that, you know, if you're watching this video anywhere else besides calbanyan.com, you need to go there right now, because I know websites, they snatch this up from YouTube, put it on their website, and I got no problem with that. Go ahead. It's okay with me. But you have a lot better experience if you go to calbanyan.com, because right below here is the text, the graphics, the links, and other cool stuff like weekly specials that just make this podcast more valuable to you. Plus, there's a link right below it on calbanyan.com that is an audio-only link, because some of you like to just listen to us instead of looking at us. And excuse me, if you've been watching the last few podcasts, you know that I'm working through kind of a little sniffle here, and I picked up a little bit of a laryngitis, sore throat thing at the National Guild of Hypnotists convention, and since we record 4 podcasts at a time, this is just a few days after the convention, and I'm still getting over it. Don't think I've been sick for 3 weeks. Don't send me, you know, herbal medicines or something like that. All right, with that out of the way, let me tell you that I'm excited to have back with us once again, Brenda Titus. Let me tell you about Brenda. She's nobody has more enthusiasm for what we do than Brenda Titus. And you know what? She is dedicated to not only helping her clients, but helping others in the profession. I've never seen someone surpass her desire so quickly in the profession, in her rise in the profession, to want to help others. Yes, she's got a BA in sociology. Yes, she's got an MA in criminology. Yes, she could have been the hypno police, but instead, she's a 5-pather. And of course, I've been drumming it. She is the newest recipient of the 5-Path Leadership Award. How you doing, Brenda?
I'm doing great, Cal. Thank you so much. And let me tell you all a little bit about Cal. Of course, when he talks about that 5-Path Leadership Award, it would be nothing without Cal Banyan and his wife Maureen. They are here in Tustin, California with the Banyan Hypnosis Center. Beautiful training facility here. A great place to come and study, a very professional environment. And I hear that we are going to have students coming up in October. Isn't that right, Cal?
Yes.
Yay!
Gosh, that's like the greatest, biggest secret there is. Let's see, I'm looking at a link here. October 15th through the 25th, it's going to be the October HypnoFest training. It's going to be lots of hypnosis training. It is our usual NGH-approved 5-path certification. That's even more than that. It's the NGH-approved Banyan Hypnosis Certification Super Course with 5-path and 7-path. 10 days to excellence, and we're so excited. By the way, there's a weekend in the middle, so you get 2 days off. You're here in Orange County, California. You can hit the beach. You can go to Disneyland. You can go to Knott's Berry Farm, Universal Studios on the weekend, and kind of recharge your batteries. Let's see. How's that sound?
Awesome. I love it. I love it when we have students here in the center. It's exhausting because I'm kind of adding in time to make sure that I can help with supervision and just talking and mentoring with people and spending some time with them, but it's so worth it. Even with the extra time, you know, that we put in, the long days and everything, because just the energy and the excitement of having new people and meeting new people and sharing my passion, as well as watching them grow and change as they're learning 7-path, it's just a great place to be. So I'm looking forward to October.
What's the coolest thing is you watch people come in on the first day and they've never hypnotized anyone. And then you get to watch them day by day, because twice a day you practice, right? What's that like for you to watch them change?
Oh my gosh, just to watch their confidence level, and also because they practice age regression, so they're doing practice happy time age regression, and it fills my heart so much to watch people have these moments of revivifying their first bike ride without training wheels, or a Christmas morning, and it's just, I love it. I love it when we have students here.
Hey, and you guys and gals watching, every day, Brenda, Maureen, and Tally, all certified hypnotists, people who've seen clients, they supervise the practice sessions, and it's just my public thank you to Brenda, Maureen, and Tally. They don't get paid extra for it. They just come in because they understand that to really grow in the profession, you must be a teacher. And when you're teaching these new hypnotists, you're growing and learning. Isn't that right?
Yes, absolutely.
Cool. Hey, what are we going to talk about today?
Well, today we are going to talk about a couple of mini topics. I want to talk a little bit about some communication issues, communication with our clients. Then I have some questions for you about those stage hypnosis shows because I want to understand so much better. So my first couple of questions, this was actually, I had an email from a Five Pather who asked specifically about working with clients who are not the same language originally. So, you know, either English is a second language or we do have Five Pathers who are out there internationally. That was why I stumbled on my language there for a moment myself, because they might be seeing a client in Dutch, but the client speaks another language. So just looking for some tips on how we can communicate clearly these concepts that sometimes can be kind of confusing, or, you know, even explaining certain things to people when we have that language barrier already set up in front of us.
Okay. First of all, what's our general rule? Who can be hypnotized? People of normal intelligence.
Yes.
And mentally healthy.
Yes.
Right? And why do we need that? So that we can communicate with them. And, you know, we don't have to be psychologists. We don't have to be doctors. We work mainly with normal everyday people with normal everyday problems and issues and stuff like that. So when the client comes in for the first time, they fill out some paperwork, what are they going to do? They're going to watch a pre-talk video, and then they're going to come in. We're going to finish the pre-talk in the first part of the pre-hypnosis interview. Ask them, why did you come in here today? What is it that you want to accomplish? Is there any questions about anything you saw in the video? Do you have any questions about hypnosis? And as you enter into this dialogue, you find out, do they have the capacity for you to communicate with them? Now, here's something that is kind of like a Banyanism, and that is simple talk is hypnosis talk. And that is the more simple you can state what needs to be stated, the more readily it is accepted by the subconscious mind, and also the instructions are more readily followed. And so as you're talking to the person, you find out what level of vocabulary they have. And it could be because English is a second language, or it could just be because of their background and education. And so if you can have an intelligent conversation with the individual before the session, then in the hypnosis session, you just carry on with that same level of dialogue. After all, Five Pathers understand, because the style of hypnosis we do is very interactive, that a hypnosis session is at its most basic, fundamental level, a conversation. And so you practice the style of conversation you have in the hypnosis in the pre-hypnosis interview. If you're having communication problems when you're doing that pre-hypnosis interview, then you know, this is probably not a person that you should be working with. Or you need to dial down and become more simple. But if you can't get simple enough to where you can still have an intelligent, productive conversation, then you're not going to be able to have a productive hypnosis session. Does that make sense?
That does, definitely. So keeping it simple, dialing it way down, and also being aware of sometimes, you know, we had seen this recently in a post on our Five Pathers board of even realizing once one of my colleagues had said that their client kept speaking in past tense while they were doing age regression, but they were still in it. And it turned out to just be even just a misunderstanding of the language. The client was revivifying. They were right there. They were in the middle of it. It's just the way that they spoke about it was not quite what the hypnotherapist expected.
Right. When people speak in past tense, when you're trying to do age regression, the most common problem is they didn't understand the instruction that they were actually supposed to regress and relive the thing. The other is that they're not deep enough and they're unable to revivify. But the weird thing that can happen is, and one of the videos I have available to our students, called the Michelle video, is I had a client that always spoke in past tense. Her parents were Polynesian speakers, and there's something about an idiosyncrasy of her speech that caused her, even when she was revivifying, to speak in past tense. And that was, of course, driving me crazy during the session, because I'm thinking, does she not understand that she's supposed to be reliving it as if it was happening again? Is she not deep enough? Is she, for some reason, just refusing to revivify because of trying to avoid the pain of the experience? But eventually I figure out in the session that, hey, it was funny because I did age progression work, which is pretty much standard operating procedure with me. And when she went into the future, she's her probable future, not actual future. She was still speaking in past tense. That's when I knew for sure it was an idiosyncrasy of her speech because of English being, for her, it was her first language, but it had been slightly altered by growing up in a family where so much of a different language was spoken that she had some tense confusion in her language. So, it happens.
Great. So it sounds like, again, we've had a little bit of a theme with some of our episodes too. We need to really be tuned in with our client about if they're tracking, if they're following along with us, and being aware that there may be some idiosyncrasies. It's not that they're not following along. It might take a little bit of time, extra time on our part. Keep it simple, but really be tuned in to them and make sure that they're understanding and following along. Sound good?
Yes, this is why it's really important that when you go through your training, that you learn principles and you learn fundamentals and you get a good foundation for what you're doing. And in my opinion, you need to have a process. So you're going from point A to point B, point B to point C, point C to point D, and so on, because that allows you the flexibility to work with clients in the way they need to be worked with when you're working within concepts of principles and not just a script, not just a checklist, because people will need you to do different things for them. Brenda, have you ever had a textbook client that did everything perfectly?
No.
That's right. That's right. Good. What else you got?
All right. So the next mini topic I'd like to talk about today, I want to pick your brain about stage hypnosis, because I love stage hypnosis. If I could have gone to every single show at the convention, I would have, but I needed a break and I was tired. But I did go to a couple of them, and I went with a couple of five pathers. And the best way to explain my question to you, Cal, is how do they do that? I really want to understand, especially because I think it helps me understand then, and all of the rest of us, want to understand how they're able to get their participants to do these amazing things, because I think that that's what the public sees. And so then it helps us be able to explain better with our clients. So Cal, help us out. What's going on in these stage hypnosis shows that I love so much?
You know, one of the things is, I think there is a misunderstanding about hypnosis and from perspective. And I've heard one well-known trainer say that the more you add psychology to hypnosis, the more you dilute the hypnosis. And I totally disagree with that. The person who said that was not a psychologist, did not have any significant psychology training. And my background is all psychology, a bachelor's degree in psychology, master's degree in psychology, ABD for PhD in clinical psychology, and which means all but dissertation. And so I cannot separate psychology from hypnosis. And what is psychology? It's really the study of the mind. And So when you look at stage hypnosis just from a stage hypnotist point of view, which is valid, but we can add to it when we start looking at it from someone who has advanced psychological training. And so I'm going to tell you something that might be shocking. You can have an absolutely hysterical, successful hypnosis show with no one going into hypnosis.
Oh.
Uh-oh. Now, of course, the more people that go into hypnosis, the better. But what you need more than hypnosis is you need compliance. People following instructions, buying in to the illusion or the process or what you're trying to do. And so, let's say that, so there's a number of things that's going on here. So I'm glad we have a little bit of time to talk about this.
Yes.
So there's certain principles of consciousness, and that is that it's persuasion. There's studies that were done that, for example, let's say you wanted to increase seatbelt wearing behavior, and you go to this neighborhood and you go to the people, you know, homeowners, and say, can we put this huge sign, it's like 10 feet by 20 feet, in your front yard that says buckle up or something like that? And you know what most people said? No, you ain't putting that in my yard. But then what they did is they went around to another identical group and they said, hey, would you mind putting this small sticker on your window or on your bumper of your car that says, remember to buckle up? And you know what? The compliance was much higher, as is no surprise. But then when they went back and they said to those same people that bought in on the little thing, hey, would you be willing to put this big sign on your front yard that says buckle up, that they doubled, tripled, quadrupled the number of people that say, yes, I'd be open to doing that, or yes, go ahead and do that. So what's the lesson about stage hypnosis? What they do, a good stage hypnotist will, you know, hypnotize the group. Well, let me go before that. I was curious about this too, so I took a course on stage hypnotism. I've never done stage hypnosis, but I'm a person that is I know about hypnosis. I'm very good at observing human behavior, and I've studied persuasion. And so what's going on here is they'll do like suggestibility tests, like hands rising and falling, hand clasp tests, a number of different tests. When someone is successful at that, that's just a little thing. It's like the bumper sticker on the car. And they're in the audience, there's not a big deal about it. Maybe it worked, maybe it didn't. And then the hypnotist will invite those that had success with that to participate in the show. Now it's greatly increased the probability with no hypnosis at all that when they ask them to do something more fun, bigger, sillier on stage, that they're going to do it. Now, there's also a principle of consciousness called consistency, and that is if you do some silly little hypnotic thing, like having your hands stick together or something, it greatly increases the ability that you'll do something more, because there's this group consciousness that happens. It's like, okay, and you know this in your mind, that you had this experience in the crowd. That little thing worked. Then you go up on the stage, it is expected of you for stuff to start happening. And if you're not compliant with the directions, I'm purposely avoiding the word suggestion, the directions of the hypnotist to do something else a little bit more fun. See, and so there's the stepwise pyramiding of doing more and more silly, entertaining things. If you decide not to, there's this real feeling inside of unpleasantness, and what happens is the person has to choose between the unpleasantness of the inconsistent behavior of having done A, B, and C, and then when asked to do D, the more outrageous thing, to not do it. That feels incongruent. the dissonance inside, or to just go along with the crowd and do the next funny thing. I don't know, like hula hoop, or to do a Hawaiian hula dance, or something silly when the music comes on. And so even without hypnosis, we can explain why people would do silly stuff on the stage. Now, here's another thing. Everybody that goes on the stage knows that when you go on the stage, you're going to be asked to do silly, fun stuff. And so you've given permission. You kind of have a contract with the audience and with the hypnotist. Hey, I'm up here. I've bought in. Let's have some fun. Now, I'm not saying that hypnosis has nothing to do with what goes on the stage. But there is a whole lot of factors going on outside of the realm of hypnosis that explains why people do those silly things on stage. So you add hypnosis to that and it works even better. But this is why people will do stuff that they would not normally do that's so out of character, is they've been brought through a process that encourages, allows, and suggests fun, outrageous behavior. How's that?
Awesome. Thank you, Cal, so much. I know, you know, like I said, I talked to people all weekend. I was there with a couple of friends, and I watched them on stage, and I, you know, talking to them afterwards about their experience or showing them the pictures that I had taken of them. And, you know, just hearing their feedback, I just really wanted to get your take on that because, you know, like I said, I love stage hypnosis. I think it's fun. I think it's fun. At the same time, they all said, well, come on, let's go. And I said, no, no way am I getting up there.
Okay, that was going to be my question to you.
Yeah.
Why not?
I don't want to.
That's right.
I like, partly because I like to watch it. I enjoy watching it. It is possible that under the right circumstances, I could get up there and probably be pretty hysterical. But, you know, I got to keep my professionalism going on, right?
Well, that's it. I mean, at that moment, in that time, you were choosing not to do that.
Yeah.
Another time you might. But do you understand that if you had chose to do it, how you would be buying into it?
Very. I especially after the way that you just explained it. Oh, yeah. It's true. If I would have gone in with the intention of, you know, yeah, let's do it, let's have a great time, you know, it would have been very different. And I have to say, you know, it's so neat to go to the shows at the convention because you already know, you know, you've got these hypnotists. You know, there was a woman who was in one of the shows and she was great. She was bought in the entire show, just, you know, loved her. And she won she was recognized at the banquet for her significant contributions to the field. She was installed into the Order of Braid on Saturday night. And I thought, oh my gosh, how amazing is this woman that, you know, she can get up there, have a good time, be so silly, dancing to Hair or whatever. And then Saturday night, you know, be so honored with such a high honor in our profession. So I think it's so, I enjoy it. I enjoyed the experience. I enjoyed learning and having fun as well. And having so many great opportunities to discuss it actually with my friends that I went to the show with and ended up watching for most of the evening. So thank you, Cal, for talking about that. I know it's kind of one of those different topics, but it's out there. It's something that the public often is, that's their question. So thank you so much for letting us talk about that today.
Hey, you know what? And there was a rumor out there some time ago that I don't like stage hypnotists. That's not true. I get lots of business, lots of referrals from stage hypnotists. When it's done well, I think it helps to build awareness about our profession. Of course, anything can be done poorly and then it hurts us. So, but I think the vast majority of stage hypnotists out there are raising awareness, building our profession, and hey, you know what? If you are a person that's coming into our profession and you want to help clients, one of the best ways you can advertise what you do is to take a course in stage hypnotism and do some stage hypnosis work. All right, wrap it up.
All right, well, thank you all so much for joining us today. And we look forward to seeing you next time. We'll tackle some more issues and questions. But for now, I am Brenda Titus. You can reach me at Brenda@OCHypnotherapy.com. I'm also on Facebook under Healing Path Hypnosis and OC Hypnotherapy. Try to post inspirational things or different things over there. And I thank Cal for being here, having me here today. So I will sign off with that. Thanks so much. Have a great week, everybody.
All right. Thank you, Brenda. And everybody, please go to facebook.com/hypnosisETC. Get in on the conversation. Go to hypnosis.org, O-R-G, because there we have some free how to hypnotize. Let's learn how to do instant rapid inductions and just become a better hypnotist. And we got all kinds of good stuff on there. E-zine, so much good stuff. Great resource. That's it for now. See you in class. See you October. And if it's past October when you see this, just go to hypnosis.org. I always have my schedule there. And of course, here on calbanion.com. That's it. Cal Banion, signing off.
This recording is a property of Cal Banion and the Banion Hypnosis Center for Training and Services, Incorporated. All rights reserved, for private use only, may not be duplicated without permission. For contact information, go to www.hypnosiscenter.com.